This is Take Care, a health and wellness show produced by WRVO Public Media. Thanks for joining us. I'm Catherine Loper.
And I'm Jason Smith. First, a discussion on how far we can push the body, physically and mentally.
What is our limit? Researchers have been trying to answer that question for decades. Olympic athletes are one thing, but what about a mother in distress? We've all heard the stories about incredible feats of strength from otherwise average people. Is it adrenaline? Untapped, unrealized strength? Like most things, the answer is complicated. Joining us to discuss this topic is Alex Hutchinson, author of the book Endure, Mind, Body, and the Curiously Elastic Limits of Human Performance. Alex is also a journalist and was previously a middle long-distance runner for the Canadian National Team. Thanks for being with us today, Alex.
Thanks, Catherine. I appreciate the interest.
So let's just start with the basics. What is endurance?
I spent several years thinking about that question, so I'll try and condense it here. The short answer is that it's really hard to make any definition of endurance that's tied to like whether you get enough oxygen or whether your muscles can work. And so the definition that I like to use is that it's the struggle to continue against a mounting desire to stop. And so that applies whether you're running a marathon or, you know, studying for an exam or whatever the case may be.
There are a couple different factors that go into that. So could you briefly explain the different views of endurance, the human machine, or the it's all in your head view of endurance?
Yeah, and I should say both of those are sort of oversimplified extremes that I use to illustrate it. But really in the 20th century, there was a lot of effort to understand the human body like a machine, to think about if we understand the workings of the engines and the fuel and all that, that we could understand the absolute limits to which a human could be driven just by plugging in the physiological parameters like your VO2 max and things like that that people may have heard of. But the truth is that that approach to endurance never really tells you who's going to win a race or how far you can push yourself. And so in the last decade or two, there's been a real interest in trying to understand the brain's role and understanding why it is that some people can push harder than others, or why that some days you can push yourself harder than other days. And the central point there in that view is that what matters really is how hard it feels. You stop when it gets too hard for you to tolerate. And so it's more important than what's going on in your body is how you perceive or react to what's going on in your body.
It seems from your research that it doesn't seem to be one or the other, but a combination of both. And you even say it's not a tidy choice between the two. So when it comes to both physical and mental endurance, do they operate on their own? Or is one really more important than the other? Or how do they operate in combination?
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it, that it's not one or the other. You can't win the Olympics with a tough mind and a body that's not ready. But conversely, you can't win the Olympics with the greatest body if you're not willing to push yourself and have that mental fortitude too. So it really is both, just like the nature or nurture debate in genetics. You can't have one without the other. Now, which is more important is an interesting question and kind of depends on the context. I think if you want to win the Olympics, it's mostly physical. There's a sort of very high bar you have to clear in terms of your physical talent and training before the mental factor comes in for that last 1%. For most of us, though, we're born in a given body, and you can't really radically alter your body from week to week, but you can change how hard you're able to push yourself or how deeply you dig. So I think on a personal level, the mental stuff is much more important. But when you're comparing yourself to other people, the physical becomes more important.
One of the things you talk about in Endure has to do with pacing, and it's not just based on how you feel at the moment. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
We all think that pacing is very, very simple, that you should just go, if you're running a race, you should pace yourself as evenly as possible, and anything other than that indicates you've made a mistake. But if you actually look at how world record setters pace themselves, they have this distinctive pattern where they start out fast, settle into a steady pace, and then at the end of the race, they have this dramatic acceleration, which is just like 12-year-olds running a race for the first time. It's sort of a hardwired pattern that even the best runners do. And for some scientists, that's an indication that we're wired to hold back and save a little bit of reserve to make sure that we don't run out of energy prematurely and perhaps do ourselves damage. Even the greatest runners find that when the finish line approaches and when their brain knows that the danger is going to be passed, they suddenly discover they have more energy left than they thought they did.
I think that's so interesting. Part of it is also about expectations. So if we were able to free ourselves from expectations, would we be able to perform better? And you talk about a distance runner who had part of her temporal cortex removed, and so her expectations were different. Can you talk a little bit about that?
There's a lot of ways in which your expectations can either spur you forward or hold you back. And, you know, I had a personal experience as a runner where I had a dramatic breakthrough because the timing given by the timekeeper was off. He kind of tricked me by accident into thinking I was having a really good race, and so I did. And so this ultra runner named Diane Van Deren is another really interesting example. She really only became an ultra runner after having brain surgery to deal with her epileptic seizures, which were getting more and more severe. And the surgery helped with her seizures, but it also left her with some deficits in terms of being able to keep track of time and place. So she had a lot of trouble figuring out how far she'd been running, how far she still had to run, where she was at a given place. And what's interesting is that apparently she only became a runner after that happened, and she became a champion ultra runner. And what some people think is that essentially when she's out running, because she doesn't have a good sense of time and place, the only question she can really ask herself is, can I keep going? Can I take the next step? Can I take the next 10 steps? Instead of worrying about, can I run another 50 miles or another 100 miles, which is sort of a paralyzing question that most of us would ask ourselves in that situation. The brain's desire to impose a cautious pacing pattern, it doesn't work for her because she's not really clear on how far she's come and how far she still has to go. And that's made her into one of the greatest ultra runners of her generation.
You did a ton of research on different examples of endurance and experiments, and you actually participated in one to see if brain endurance training really worked. What was that like?
Yeah, this was fascinating. I was at a conference, and a researcher said, I think I can make people faster at running a marathon just while they're sitting in their armchairs training their brains. And I thought, that sounds pretty cool. I'll try that and write an article about it. And so I spent 12 weeks doing this brain endurance training program. The idea is that when you run a marathon or do any other sustained activity, it's not just the physical fatigue you have to fight against. It's also the mental fatigue, the sort of effort of holding your finger as close as possible to the flame and not pulling it back, pushing yourself as hard as you can. And you can train that ability by doing these cognitively fatiguing computer tasks where you sit in front of a computer and tap buttons in response to what appears on the screen. And so I did that. And there's been research showing that this can work. And my number one conclusion was that this is phenomenally boring and really hard to sit in front of a computer for an hour at a time, 5 days a week, tapping at these buttons. So my experience was just anecdotal. I wasn't doing a study, so I don't know whether it worked. But I do know that even if it did, I would never sign up for that again.
Is our brain our worst enemy or our greatest advantage to endurance? There are many more people, I think, who have brain endurance versus physical endurance, in my opinion. But can those of us who aren't long-distance runners use the theory that if we can take our brain endurance and apply it to physical endurance, we can get a little farther in our daily workouts?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I don't want to be saying, look, it's all in your head and you can do anything you believe you can achieve. That's pushing it a little too far because the physical does matter. But I do think understanding that when you run into a physical, what feels like a physical limit, it feels totally non-negotiable. It feels like, oh, well, my legs simply can't go any farther than this. And the truth is that almost always in situations like that, that feeling is an illusion, that it's your brain, it's an orange light, it's a caution light saying you should stop. It's not a red light saying you have to stop. And so gradually you can learn to push those limits back if you're aware that these limits are not bumping into a sort of ironclad physical limit. And you can get better at sort of pushing a little farther each time, using that mental endurance that you may have in other aspects of your life to push a little harder and a little farther in the physical realm.
And one of the modern day understandings of endurance is the marathoner. Can you talk a little bit about how Nike's breaking two project factor into your understanding of endurance and the limits of the human body? That's the under 2 hour marathon project.
Yeah, you know, they spent years and tens of millions of dollars trying to engineer the fastest possible marathon. And I was covering it for Runner's World for about 6 months. And so I wrote a ton of articles about all the technology they were using, the new shoe technology and the way they were setting up drafting to reduce aerodynamic drag and all these sorts of things. But at the end of the project, what I came away with was that I thought that the success of the project, which was that a Kenyan runner named Eliud Kipchoge came very close to 2 hours. He ran 2 flat, 0 minutes and 25 seconds. The success was in some ways due to Kipchoge's remarkable mental strength, that his ability to push himself and to build his own confidence in his abilities was really the distinguishing factor. And so once he had done that and proven to himself that he could run close to 2 hours, it wasn't surprising to me that in September of this year, he ran a huge world record, slicing more than a minute off the existing world record. So I think there's a real important lesson there about his ability to create belief that he could go faster than anyone else had before and how that translated into a world record.
Well, thanks for sharing your research into this topic of endurance and joining us here on Take Care, Alex.
Thanks so much, Catherine. I really appreciate it.